As for the Master, we're tickled to have you with us today, and we're thankful that you have chosen to make the Gospel Radio Network your destination for Bible study this morning, as each of us has an opportunity to do that today. Last week, we finished up on the Wednesday program the book of Leviticus, and this Wednesday, we're finishing up the book of Numbers, and next Wednesday, we'll be finishing up the book of Deuteronomy, so we are flying through the Old Testament. So have your seatbelt on and be prepared to rip through about 10 chapters here this morning. We appreciate you being with us, Miss Frieda and Miss Morgan. We appreciate Jody and my parents and all those this morning that are normally listening. And we thank you for your faithful attendance here on the airwaves this morning. We're thankful that you have made the opportunity to be with us. And as our normal habit is, we set off to begin our broadcast in regular fashion by going through the things that are going on around us, our regular bulletin board announcements. So we have the opportunity to look at some things that are happening, and we would invite your attention to those things. What do we got first?
Well, there's still tonight, there's a gospel meeting that's going on at the Broken Bow Church of Christ.
Broken Bow.
Their final evening of it. It is Garrett Bookout who is conducting this meeting. The theme is life, and tonight at 7 p.m., A Saved Life. That's going to take place at 400 Airport Road there in Broken Bow, Oklahoma, at the Broken Bow Church of Christ.
All right, Broken Bow, faithful congregation up there. We appreciate them.
I think there's a singing that's going to be going on Friday evening at the DCAB congregation. This is their ninth annual gospel singing. That'll take place 7 to 9:30 p.m., and they are located at 1265 East Front Street, there, which is Highway 82 East in DCAB. If you're putting it in your GPS, though, it's not going to take you there.
Hmm.
It'll take you somewhere else. So if you're coming into DCAB, then you'll take 82 from downtown. You're going to be heading east out there, and they'll be on the north side of the road.
All right. Brother Colley called me last night and said, "Are you going?" I said, "Well, I'm going to try." So let's all try to get up there.
Let's see. Then we also have... at Atlanta, their gospel meeting will take place. It'll start Sunday. That is the 26th and run through March the 1st. And they're having Adam Orr. And Adam is from Midland, Odessa out there, one of the congregations. And he's coming in to conduct this meeting. And you can get more information by calling 903-796-3371 or going to atlantacoc.org. We plan on also being able to offer this meeting. You'll be able to connect to a special link from the homepage, and you'll be able to listen in to that meeting as well. Then we also have something that I've been excited about this, and it was something that I wish that I could have gone to, but it is the Young Men's Development Conference that they're having at the BCS congregation. That is at Bryan College Station, BCS Church of Christ. That'll be March the 12th through the 19th. And this, they've got an intense lineup of classes for these young men. They're aiming at young men ages 18 to 25, but they're not limiting it to that. It's going to be taking place for us. It's during our spring break, so some of the young men will be able to go. But it is a week-long endeavor. It'll start off that Sunday. It'll end the following Sunday, the 19th. And they're gearing it up where they're having morning sessions, early morning sessions, late morning sessions, early afternoon, late afternoon, and then evening worship every day. Hmm. And they have it lined out where they're going to study certain topics during those times. So like the early morning sessions are going to deal with structural tools. They'll talk about hermeneutics and homiletics and things of that nature. They're going to talk about acceptable worship in the late morning, and they're going to deal with singing and praying and giving and things of that nature. The early afternoon is going to deal with sound lifestyle, talking about proper dress, as far as avoiding female immodesty, social drinkings, and dealing with that. late afternoon doctrine, late afternoon session is Sound Doctrine. And there they're going to deal with withdrawals of fellowship. They're going to deal with the indwelling of the Holy Spirit. They're going to deal with evidences of God. So it is a great lineup. I would encourage you to have your young men go to this. You can get information going to 979-744-7470 or going to bcschurchofchrist.com for more information on that. And then don't forget, though, just at the end of March is the 51st annual MSOP, Memphis School of Preaching Lectureship. This year's theme, Build Your Hopes on Things Eternal, is going to take place March 26th through March 30. And you can get the information and a flyer by going to msop.org. There on the homepage, you'll find a link that'll take you to the lectureship information. Or if you want, you'd rather just give them a call, 901-751-2242. And, Chip, that's all that we have over here on the bulletin board this morning.
All right. Well, that's plenty going on. And there's other stuff happening, I know, but we may just not have that before us, but keep us in your mind. And if you have announcements and things that need to be announced, we'd like to have announced, certainly run them by our overseers. You can contact us here at mornings@tgrn.org or just pick up Ma Bell's handset there and call us at 903-537-4129. We'd be glad to talk to you about it. Certainly, look forward to helping you on the Gospel Radio Network. Well, this morning, as we mentioned, we're going to be closing up the book of Numbers. And if you have looked at the schedule that is there before you on the network, you'll notice that the main thrust of our discussion this morning is the idea of preparations before crossing over Jordan. So, you know, we've been in the wilderness for some 40 years. There is an entire generation of those that were unbelieving that would die in the wilderness because of their unbelief. You remember they would spend a year in the wilderness for each day that the spies were gone. And, you know, that was 40 days. So we are seeing the 40 years come to a close. And, you know, when we get ready to go, you know, to work or on a trip, there are preparations that have to be made, and you put things in order. You know, you got 12 cats in the house. You make sure you got a whole bunch of food and water down, you know, make sure the litter box is clean. You know, you pack your bags. You're going across the water. You make sure your passport's in order. You make sure you know the language of the place you're going. On and on you could go. So we are seeing the preparations that are taking place here prior to the crossing of the Jordan. We have these several discourses of Moses coming up behind us in the book of Deuteronomy. We get to see, and we see the death of Aaron. We see the death of Moses coming our way. And so there's a whole lot of things that are going to happen prior to crossing over the Jordan. Now, as Bible students, I'm sure you're aware that the first thing they do across the Jordan is they go to war with Jericho. I don't know if you could really call it a war or not. It was a one-sided war. God would lead them into victory. But they are preparing for that. And so the first thing that we would notice as you start through chapter 26, even the first 50 or 51 verses are all about numbering of the men that are ready to go to war, 20 years and above. And so as you peruse down through there, you see Simeon in verse 14, his family, and Gad in verse 18, and Judah in verse 22, and all down through here, as you we see that people are tallied, and so we come to a total of 601,730, and you say, wow, that's a lot of people, and absolutely it is, but if you sit back just for a second, we're considering the mass of people, certainly that came out of Egypt, that grew in the wilderness, even though a generation would die. Notice that the number of people that is going to cross the Jordan now is a massive number. I don't know what that number would be, Richard, if you figured that each of the 601,730 had a wife, that double it, and then you figure one child or two children, however you'd like to look at it. There's a mass of people, plus herds and flocks and all this servants and that would be crossing. And so we have these individuals that are counted here, again, as preparation to cross over into the promised land. And verse 51 gives us that number that we just stated of 601,730.
And Chip, you know, even to think about it, you know, you talk about how many more we may have, you know, with wives and children. Mm. But again, these are 20 years old and older,
mm-hmm.
and they're able to go to war. So there are some, you know, we're not counting the ones that are under the age of 20.
Yeah.
But there are some who are counted above the age of 20
mm-hmm.
who do not have the physical ability to go to war. So we have the extremely aged, mm-hmm. you know, maybe that are still, you know, well, we don't have that, but we do have, you know, because we lost those. But we have those who are maybe physically unable,
mm-hmm.
you know, they still have to be able to go to war. So there's still a number that's in there as well. So we, you know, and really we get to see this, you know, the bookends of this book. I mean, that's why it's called Numbers.
Mm, right.
We have the numbering, the first numbering and the second numbering, and here it is.
All right. And so it's a great number of people that is going to be crossing as you progress through the chapter, beginning at about verse 57 or so. You see the numbering of the Levites. There is this great admonition that we see as a reminder. I don't know that we mention it so very often, but we should. God is faithful to remember those that love and adore him. And when you come down to verse 65, as chapter 26 ends, notice that there was not left a man of them save Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, and Joshua, the son of Nun. Here are the two that we were reminded of that came back from Canaan with a faithful report. You know, the others in chapter 13 were saying, there's no way that we can take this land. The people are far too great. We're like grasshoppers in their sight. And Joshua and Caleb both says, oh, absolutely we can take this land. Caleb would say, give me my mountain. And so here's these individuals that are remembered as being faithful to the Lord. The rest of them died. All of that generation has passed away now, save these two men, and they're remembered as the chapter comes to a close. And so we're mindful of faithfulness that will pay off. We'll get to see them cross over and enter into God's promised land.
And that explains my misspeak a minute ago about the aged. You know, I mean, the two oldest guys that are going to be there are going to be, you know, Joshua and Caleb.
Mm.
The rest who were 20 years old and above perished. So, you know, our top age is going to be about 60 years old if we leave out Caleb and Joshua.
Yeah.
You know, when we think about these numberings as well. Because the rest would perish in the wilderness.
Yeah, what a thing to behold. And even, wasn't it yesterday, I guess, Ryan mentioned even the death of these 24,000. There's a process that God was taking us through here. And he does everything on his timetable. Remember passages like Galatians 4 and verse 4, in the fullness of time. And so now the fullness of time has come for them, and they are preparing to cross over into this great promised land, this large land, this great land that flows with milk and honey. And so that's what we are preparing to do. And so we crest over into chapter number 27, further preparations that we see here, basically dealing with inheritance for women. You know, there was a lot of men that died in this situation, and we're going to find out that there are women that have no husbands, had grown up without fathers and such. And so we see that there is a special ordinance that is put in place as they have brought this concern to Moses. And I don't know if I was reading too much into it or not, Richard, but it seems to me that this was something that was placed by God to keep others from causing themselves to sin. I thought about land grabbing, you know, the idea of, hey, if I marry her and get into their inheritance, you know, and then if I married her family or got into, you know, there's things that could have been done by man in order to, and you know, to take this land, even the way God had not disposed of it by tribe. You know, we see even back in chapter 26, this idea of, you know, the larger tribes get the larger inheritance, the smaller tribes get the smaller inheritance. And so this idea of even keeping from land grabbing is something that I kind of put in the margin of my notes here. This is something that God could foresee, perhaps, And so these ordinances are set in place, again, prior to crossing over the Jordan. And so this inheritance of women that's discussed at least in the first 11 verses or so. And then as you cross over about chapter 27 of verse 12, we start to see this appointment of Joshua. And so Moses, as you know, is not going to be able to cross into the promised land because of his disobedience, as it were, as we're going to see even recorded here in Holy Writ. His rebellion is what it's referred to as by God, as he would strike the rock instead of speak to the rock as was directed by God. But nevertheless, we see this appointment of Joshua. And so the death of Moses is foretold here in this chapter about verses 12 to 14. And we see this successor that's going to be set up. And again, my mind goes in different directions. And I thought here about the succession of Elisha and Elijah, because as it was done here in this particular chapter, this succession is noted before a mass of witnesses. I thought about that which took place with Elisha and Elijah, that which was done before witnesses. Again, part of the law, you know, two or three witnesses, that same concept that spreads even into the New Testament. Notice the succession here that is going to be done ordained by God, obviously, but before a mass of witnesses. So they'll understand that God has chosen Joshua to do this particular job. This is a great leader that we're seeing coming about. And certainly we know the rest of the story. We understand that he is a great leader. He is the one that would faithfully sit amidst Sinai somewhere waiting on Moses to come down, you remember? And just as Moses was gone for 40 days, Joshua sat up there for 40 days as well. He's a faithful servant of God. So we see this appointment here in chapter number 27, even as it comes to an end. The Lord commanded this.
You know, I thought about that as well. You know, we're having these two brothers who had significant roles of leadership, Moses and Aaron, both of them guilty in the sin when God told Moses to take Aaron and the rod and speak to the rock, and he didn't. He struck it. And because of that, because they didn't glorify God in this, he's going to refuse them going. They're both going to die upon the mountains, Mount Nebo, Mount Hor. He's going to Mount Hor. Moses go to Mount Nebo. He's going to now, as instructed here with Joshua, that Joshua is going to take this lead, and he's going to do it before the people. He's going to put some of his power upon him. In other words, the people are going to see that he's the chosen one. The same thing has already happened with the high priest. Back in, over there in chapter 20, it was verses 22 to 29, and he told him there, he said, take Aaron and Eleazar his son, and bring him up to Mount Hor, and strip Aaron of his garments, and put them on Eleazar his son, for Aaron shall be gathered to his people, and he shall die there. And it says, Moses did as the Lord commanded, and they went up the mountain, Mount Hor, in the sight of all the congregation. And again, you're seeing God is the one who has instructed this change. And so with Eleazar and with Joshua, he gives the people this ability to see that these are the new ones.
Absolutely. So God's always been in charge, and God will continue to be in charge. That same recognition that we'd see with Daniel and Nebuchadnezzar, and that's a great force in the book of Daniel. But we understand that God is putting up these leaders even before the people, as the Lord commanded. So many times we see throughout this scripture that we've been examining already, as the Lord commanded. Now, as we get into chapters 28 through, I guess, about 30, we have a whole host of vows, offerings, and there's a lot that has to be considered there. We don't have the time to go through each of those, but there, I would urge you to do this. Think about, as you go through chapters 28 through 30, God is dictating here how, why, and where of worship. He has always been that way. You go back to Cain and Abel, right? He directed worship, and when we stray from it, remember, Nadab and Abihu, others, when we stray from his pattern, from his mandate, there are penalties to pay. And so as you begin, even these first verses in chapter 28, notice the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, command the children of Israel and say unto them, look here, my offering and my bread for my sacrifices made by fire for a sweet savor unto me shall ye observe to offer unto me in their due season. So God tells us when we are to worship. He tells us how we are to worship. And notice that he tells us who the worship is to be directed to. Sorry to end my sentence in a preposition, but that's exactly what I'm thinking. Notice that if you reflect back on Exodus chapter 9 and verse number 1, Pharaoh is told, let my people go that they may serve me. And so notice what's happening even now as we are about to go into Canaan. The people are told how to serve God. And so he's going to lay this out. And so as you go down through here, you'll continue to see these offerings day by day, morning, evening, Sabbath, every Sabbath, the beginning of your months, every month, throughout the months. All of these are being laid out by God, telling them exactly what he expects and exactly when he expects it to be done, right? There's days, there's times, there's exact configurements of when and how he wants it done. And another thing I marked throughout my scripture yesterday as I was looking through here in a green marker, notice, without spot, verse 3, verse 9, without spot, verse 11, without spot, continuing down, verse 19, without blemish. And that goes on and on through these chapters. God expects the very best. And so anything that would be offered to him would be perfect. And it's done after the manner. If you'll go back through these particular verses and look down here at the times that this is mentioned, after the manner, after the manner, after the manner. The original word there seems to indicate ordinance. And so remember, the ordinance of God must be followed, and they must be followed as he has laid them out. Again, refer back to Nadab and Abihu. They would agree that you must follow the ordinances of God. And so he is telling them exactly how to worship. And I appreciate that, that he would not leave us wandering in darkness, wondering how to be pleasing to him, wondering how it is that we could serve him acceptably. He tells us how, when, and where. And by the time you get to chapter 30 of this particular section that we're looking at, we get into these vows. Vows are something that are taken very seriously by God. They are discussed here. And, you know, my mind again goes all over the place with vows in the Bible. One that I thought of, Richard, that kind of boggles the mind sometimes is that vow of Jephthah back in Judges chapter 11, you know, and we see that unfold. And as he comes back home from battle, you know, it is the case that he sees the young girl coming out of the doorway and remembers, I must keep my vow. And so vows are something that are taken seriously. They are something that are seen regularly in God's word, I think. You think about Hannah back in 1 Samuel 1, as she vowed that if she could have a son, she would dedicate him to the Lord, and she did just that. She kept her word. God expects us to keep our word. Some of the column references I noticed, even in my study Bible here, point me back to Matthew chapter 14 and verse 9. You remember as Herod would be put to the test of taking off John the Baptizer's head, you see the language that is used in that verse. I would refer you to that. Also, in Acts chapter 23, in verse number 14, I was reminded here in my column reference of the men that had taken that vow to kill Paul. And so vows are something that are brought up throughout the Bible, even from cover to cover. And so this is a conversation that is taking place here, certainly man and woman, husband and wife, father, daughter, those that are taking place here. And notice the number of times, again, that I've got highlighted here, there is a law and then there is but. There is an exception. So God's grace is seen here. If this takes place, then this will take place. And so there's plenty of the if-then scenarios here throughout this particular chapter.
And Chip, it always, you know, the question, the thought of it always comes up then, and even in light of Psalm 15 and verse 4 with vows, it says, in whose eyes a vile person is despised, but he honors those who fear the Lord. Mm. He who swears to his own hurt and does not change it. Mm. You know, in other words, you're going to keep your word.
Right.
But there are times when we make vows, and then the consequence of the vow would be to sin. And that is not a vow that is to be kept.
Right.
As the vow of the men who... those who vowed to kill Paul, you know? I mean, okay, that is a vow that they could have changed and backed out of. Why? Because
sure
the vow that they have done, they have vowed to sin.
Right, murder.
And in doing so, you know, that is not one that we're expected to keep. But those that we make are expected to be kept as long as they do not violate God's law. Now, right. It may mean that I have made a vow, and then after I've done so, I find out that it's going to cost me financially a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you already made the vow.
That's right.
You know, you need to keep your word in those manners.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where we see even this idea of Psalm 15:4. God expects us, and vows are important. When we say, and that's why Jesus basically, let your yes be yes and your no be no.
Right.
You know, say what you're going to do and do it. And if you're not going to do it, don't say you're going to do it.
Be a man of your word. Just keep your word.
And that, you know, that is difficult at times to do because of inconveniences of life.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes we, you know, we things pop up and we go, you know, and we need to be more cautious about the things that we say. You know, when people say, hey, will you make me a promise or will you do this? Well, what is it?
Right.
You know.
Yeah, that's. I don't know that it's even closely related, but I think of the idea of co-signing for somebody from time to time. I mean, you know, you mean well in the beginning, but then when that other person defaults, your name's still there, and you have promised to take care of that particular financial agreement.
Right.
You know, and you've got to go through with it, so be careful about where you sign. But anyway, we have this opportunity to continue through. And we get to chapter number 31, and we see the things that are taking place in chapter 31, the campaign that takes place here. All the males are killed. The spoiling, the slaying, the vengeance of God that is laid out here. Avenge the children of Israel of the Midianites, verse number 2. And so what we see that lays out in front of us is God's justified and righteous judgment. Everything that God does is justified and righteous. And so this particular command that goes forward was to utterly destroy. And so then when you come down to about verse number 13, Moses and Eleazar, the priest, and all the princes of the congregation went forth to meet them without the camp. And Moses was wroth with the officers of the host, with the captains over the thousands and captains over a hundreds, which came from the battle. And Moses said unto them, have you saved all the women alive? Right? Now notice the reasoning behind his question, right? We're supposed to follow the guidelines of God. God's guidelines are here for a reason. And here we're going to find out the reason for what we just read about in the previous verses. These caused the children of Israel through the counsel of Balaam to commit trespass against the Lord in the matter of Peor. And there was a plague among the congregation of the Lord, even looking back to the previous chapters that we looked at yesterday. So now, therefore, kill every male among the little ones and kill every woman that hath known man by lying with him. But all the women, children that have not known man by laying with him, keep alive for yourselves. This is the judgment of God. The same principle, I believe, that we find even in the wilderness wandering. These individuals that would lead others astray, that would be a negative force, those that even back in the day of Moses coming down from Sinai, the 3,000 individuals that would not stand with the Lord that day were slain. And so you need to be on God's side. So here we have this judgment laying out before us, even down through about verse 20 or so. And so this is it's kind of hard to read, but nevertheless, it is something that God had commanded. Again, notice we are preparing to cross over the Jordan. We are preparing. We are making the way of the Lord plain, just like John the Baptizer would do for the Christ.
You know, and it helps us to understand as well, when we look back at, again, he tells us why. Because these are the women who did this, you know. And it's back in Numbers 25, starts there. It says, "And Israel abode in Shittim, and the people began to commit whoredom with the daughters of Moab, and they called the people unto the sacrifices of their gods, and the people did eat, and they bowed down to their gods, and Israel joined himself unto Baal Peor, and the anger of the Lord was kindled against Israel." Mm-hmm. That idea of, you know, that happened back in, he says, you know, back in Peor, and where this, you know, event took place, and Balaam of Peor, mm-hmm. Baal of Peor. And so they turned away from God mm-hmm. because of these individuals. You know, Jesus even spoke about the idea that, you know, offenses would come, but woe unto him through whom they come.
Mm. Absolutely. Well, that's what's laid out here. And we have the opportunity to continue down through the chapter. And verses 19 through 24, we see this principle of purification of the warriors, the prisoners, and even the spoils that were taken. The continuing verses there talk about the distribution of the spoils. But as we come into chapter 32, I think we might be able to spend a moment here because there is a valiant point that is certainly applicable for the Church of Jesus Christ today. As you come down into chapter number 32, we see this distribution of the land. We're talking about the settlements. And as chapter 32 opens, the children of Reuben and the children of Gad, they had a lot of cattle. They saw that the land of Jazer there in Gilead was a good place for cattle. And so they said, "Hey, Moses, can we stay on this side of the river? Can we have this portion of land over here?" And ultimately, what we come to find out in verse number 6, that great statement that has been preached by many a gospel preachers through the years, "Moses said unto the children of Gad and to the children of Reuben, shall your brethren go to war, and shall ye sit here?" Now, obviously, this could be a point of discouragement. Notice the counting of the men able to go to war would have been greatly reduced by these two tribes if they stayed on this side of the river. And so the question is, you're just going to sit here while your other brethren go to war? And so what a great discouragement that would have been, just like the 10 spies that we read of earlier in this book, that would say there's no way that we can take that land. Notice that discouragement spreads, even like the leaven of the Pharisees that Jesus would talk about. And so what we would like to spend a moment talk about this morning is the possibility of discouraging those around us. You know, if we just sit here and expect someone else to go to it, complacency and discouragement, all those things are that which would cause others to sit down, cause others to be discouraged. And so in verse 7, he says, "Wherefore discourage ye the heart of the children of Israel from going over into the land which the Lord has given them." Right? And so he makes the reference there in the following verses. And he reminds us again in verse number 12, as you proceed through there, that Caleb and Joshua were the only ones that, look at this, W-H-O-L-L-Y, wholly followed God. And so here we have this idea before us that we should be examples like Joshua and Caleb and wholly follow God, right? And so this idea that we have before us of going to work, this idea that we see before us about being able to go to work and then going about the business of doing the work. Would Chip, that
there's yes. something that just jumps out in this as well to me, yeah. you know, because he is talking about, he's like, hey, why are you going to break the hearts of these people from going in there just like your fathers did? And he uses that example. He said, just like they did, and nobody gets to go in of those of that generation except Caleb and Joshua. Why? Because they wholly follow me. But then he goes, if we drop on down, it says in verse number 14, he said, now look, you have risen in your father's place as a brood of sinful men to increase still more the fierce anger of the Lord against Israel. For if you turn away from following him, he will once again leave them in the wilderness, and you will destroy all these people.
Mm.
He said, now, this is what's going to happen. If you stay over here, you're going to cause them to be discouraged, and then it's going to be all your fault. You will destroy all of these people.
I wouldn't want that on me.
And so that's, I mean, here again, we have this great warning about the consequences of our actions. It influences, it has an effect on other people as well.
And, you know, you think about all that's been done in the past, you know, for the preparation of this one moment of victory. You know, try to bring that around to where we are today. Think about what's been done in the past, even for our benefit. There's a host of great, upstanding, solid men and women that have come out of denominationalism in order to make way for us, even today. Those that have stood against the innovations of man, you know, that would lead others into apostasy. There's people that have done a lot of work for you and for me. There's a lot of work that's gone into this gospel radio network that is making today's broadcast a benefit for us today. We appreciate the work that's gone into that. And so a lot of that which we see, even as you come out of Acts chapter 2, those things that are done for us in the church today, people have paid the price. There are apostles that have given their lives, have put their necks on the lines, have gone. Think about Paul and Silas and Barnabas and all those that would willingly go to jail because of preaching the gospel. All of this has been done for you and me. So guess what? Today, we're in Jericho. You know, we're fighting a war. We are against, you know, all of the enemies of God. And so we have a war on our hands, don't we?
And you know, with these, we got to also, they weren't trying to shirk responsibility.
Right, right.
You know, they said, hey, this land is good for cattle, and we've got a lot of cattle. And so they asked this, and so he tells them that, but then notice they make a promise. They said, no, let us build our holding pens, and we're going to leave our little ones and everyone here, get them all ready, and we'll go. We mm-hmm. will go and fight, and we won't come back until all the land is settled over there. You know, we won't come back to our place. Mm-hmm. We'll go out there and fight and fight and fight. And because of that, Moses said, okay, if you do that, if you'll do just like you said, if you'll get things ready, and if you will go over and you'll fight and do this thing, then this can be your land.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's that, you know, that statement as well. If you don't do this, you know, then you have sinned and your sin's going to find you out.
So notice that they're presented with a truth. They're presented with a fact. And notice the good and honest hearts then that we could really talk about with Reuben and Gad, because when they realized the effect of, you know, what they had actually laid out, you know, maybe not even in their first thought, as Richard says, you know, they were looking at the land, you know, there was a benefit for them physically there. But when they realized the effect of just sitting there, even looking back to the passage from verse number 6 that we read, you know, they immediately made arrangements, you know, to do something about it. And so, like Richard says, you know, they built their pens, they built their cities, they did these things that they promised that they would do, and then they did exactly what they would promise Moses, and that is that they would go across with the rest and go to war. And until the land was settled, they would not come home. And so they carried through with this. And so, You know, when you and I are presented with the truth, when you and I are presented with some biblical facts, when we are presented with a sin, Acts 8, you have committed sin, Simon. And so repent and pray that the thought of thy heart might be forgiven thee, right? When we are presented with facts like that, when we are presented with the idea that we could very well be leading others to sin or to some other type of defilement, what do? Do we respond the way that Reuben and Gad did? Well, I hope that we do, because they stand even as a great example to us then of how to respond when truth is presented. You know, Richard has mentioned on several occasions that, you know, the same sermon in Acts chapter 2 is preached in Acts chapter 7, and you see two different receptions, don't you? One, we see 3,000 gladly receiving, and in Acts chapter 7, you see the mob lashing out and killing the messenger, right? And so we see here that Reuben and Gad, they received a message from Moses gladly, I think.
I think also when we look at this, remember where they're locating. They're right there on the other side of the river. We're going to see Moses being able, in the book of Deuteronomy, when we see that he goes up that mountain to die, and God has just told him as well, when we saw that, Joshua would take his place, that he's going to go up there and he's going to be able to see. Mm-hmm. Well, it's situated over against Jericho. Mm. You know, I mean, think about this now. Reuben and Gad could have been sitting on this side of the river and been spectators to the events that would unfold at Jericho. They could have gone up there to an elevated position and looked out across there and watched while the brethren went to war. And sometimes I think that's what folks do. You know, Christians do that. We have been given a charge to go and to, you know, go out into the world and be the lights and be evangelistic and be these people who are not just sitting on a pew, but some will just sit there. And what does it do? It discourages. It discourages those who are out there at times working and working and working to the point where they're just like, why am I trying? Nobody else is trying. Why don't I just lay down and quit? That's how that same scenario plays out as they're spectators in all the work that's going on of a local congregation. You know, where there's individuals who are going and working in different aspects, but some are not doing anything.
You know, when I go through, construction zones, it never fails. You've got some that are just pouring on, you know, the muscle. And then you got some that are leaning on a shovel. And we joke and make fun of those that are just leaning on the shovel, right? And so I wonder if the same application couldn't be made about me if I'm just sitting, leaning on a shovel, not doing anything. That's laughable. God would tell, was it Laodicea? I wish you'd either get on the shovel or get off the shovel, one of the two. I wish you'd be there cold or hot.
Right.
So God is not pleased with complacency and sitting on the sidelines being a spectator. Great lessons from chapter 32. Chapter 33, if you've noticed, you could take and pinpoint chapter 33 with one of the maps in the back of your Bible, because basically this is a step-by-step summary of their journey. And so as you start down in verse number 5, it takes you all the way through these particular encampments and these places, these travelings that they would take, and it goes throughout this particular chapter. And then, as we mentioned earlier, we come down to about verse 38, and we see that Aaron the priest went up into Mount Hor at the commandment of the Lord and died there in the 40th year after the children of Israel were come out of the land of Egypt in the first day of the fifth month. And so Aaron was 120 and 3 years when he died. And then again, as Richard mentioned, by the time we get over to Deuteronomy 34, we'll see the death of Moses. But here's the end of this 40 years coming to a close very rapidly. And the last of this generation that would perish in the wilderness on the other side of Jordan is being recorded before us. And so we have these journeys. We have the encampments. We have the death of Aaron that's laid out before us. And then we have this charge. When you come even to about verse 51, speak unto the children of Israel and say, when you're passed over Jordan into the land of Canaan, then, look, here's what they are told to do. Drive out all the inhabitants. Remember Saul utterly destroyed the Amalekites? Drive out all the inhabitants of the land from before you and destroy all their figured stones and destroy all their molten images and quite pluck down all their high places, right? And verse 53 ends with, I have given you the land to possess it. And so here is the charge, and they are expected to keep it. And he said, he even gives a warning, right, down at the end, verse 55, if you will not drive out the inhabitants of the land from before you, then it shall come to pass that those which you let remain of them shall be pricks in your eyes and thorns in your side and shall vex you in the land wherein you dwell. Anybody think of the book of Judges just now? Over and again, I see that. But verse 56, moreover, it shall come to pass that I shall do unto you as I thought to do unto them. Man, I would not want to hear those words uttered. And so think of the preparations that have been set before us. We have been given a charge in this last day and time, in this last economy, this last dispensation of time, that we are to go out and seek and to save the lost. We are to make disciples. We are to teach, baptize, continue to teach. We are to edify. We are to be benevolent. We are to continue to build one another up. And there is a charge that sets before us. And just as God expected them to wholly follow the commandment here, he expects us to wholly follow the commandments today as well. And there is a warning. You know, there is a place that has been prepared for the devil and his angels. Jesus would talk about it on many occasions in the New Testament. It's talked about in many places. We're reminded of the fury of God in places like 2 Thessalonians 1, beginning at verse 7. Those that don't know God, those do not obey him, there's a place prepared for you. And so notice that he would do unto them as he thought to do unto the ungodly of the land. And so there is a benefit to following God, and there is a punishment for not following God. And certainly, we'd make reference again to the book of Judges. See the torment that would follow over and over and over because utterly they were not utterly destroyed. So we must follow the laws of God in order to be blessed. When you come into chapter number 34 really brings us into the borders of the land. You see the south border, verse number 3, the western border, verse number 6. You see the eastern border, verse number 10. And so notice God is telling them exactly where their land is, exactly how large the land is. And so we have this record of what God has blessed the children with. You would understand that even on the east side, you know, Reuben, Gad, and half-tribe Manasseh would have a parcel of land there. But this, which is being laid out for these nine tribes here, is described to us exactly. And he's giving us the exact borders. And certainly, again, God is very exact in what he says and what he does and how he gives. Jesus said, I've promised that there is a place for you. I've gone to prepare it for you. And if I prepare it, I'm coming back for you. You can believe that he has kept his promise and that it is there and that it is beautiful. It is that place that Peter tells us about that is not fading away. It's got your name reserved there. And so here is the inheritance as laid out by God and the borders that pertain to it. When you come into chapter number 35, gives us the opportunity to talk about the refuge cities. This is an opportunity, and the first thing that comes to my mind because of the news cycle is this sanctuary city issue. Now, today's mindset is that we flee from the laws of the land in a sanctuary city. We don't have to obey the laws of the land if we're in a sanctuary city. We're free from abiding by law, but that's got nothing to do with God's refuge cities. God has set up even an order for capital punishment that I can tell here. You go to this city of refuge that has been set up. There's going to be three on the east side of Jordan and three on the west side of Jordan. They're north to south. They're east and west. He has set them up for convenience, for ability, for the convicted one to flee to. There would be a trial that would take place, a lawful trial by the leaders of that city. And then if you were convicted actually of committing the crime, if you are in fact guilty, then you would be put to death. But this place of sanctuary is given, this place of refuge is given to keep the revenger of blood from doing something that is more of a vengeance, more of an unlawful deed. This is to keep others from sinning as well. And so notice the mindset of God as he sets up even these six cities of refuge. We have the other 42 cities that are given to the Levitical tribes from the inheritance of the others. And so we see these numbers of cities that are laid out before us. But it's interesting, as we've talked about the vows, as we talked about the inheritance, as we've talked about all the ordinances that God has set out, here's another provision that God makes even before crossing the Jordan. There would be these six cities of refuge set up. And again, no matter how you slice this, you continue to see from chapter to chapter the love of God for his people. He does not want them to sin. He wants them to enjoy the inheritance. He wants them to understand the benefits of wholly following God. And so these refuge cities are really a benefit. I would encourage you to go back and take the opportunity to look up each of these names of the cities and see their definitions and then discover for yourselves the beauty that lies within each one of these names. And see even the mindset of God as he lays these out. And so these cities are talked about even in chapter number 35. The refuge cities of God. What a beautiful thing to consider. And then as we come into chapter 36, boy, Richard, we're quickly running out of time. As we close the chapter up, we see the inheritance that is mentioned here of daughters. The mandate to marry of their own tribes, again, maybe even reflecting on some comments that I made earlier, this idea of keeping together the inheritance that would be shared even through marriage. And so notice in verse number 6, let them marry to whom they think best, only to their family of the tribe of their father shall they marry. And so we see the ordinances of God coming down. And again, you tell your son, don't touch that. You'll get burned. We do this because we love them, don't we? And so as we look down at all of these ordinances, as these laws, these things that God has put into place, even as it regards the inheritance, it is for their best concern that he is looking out for. And so all of these things... they are fairly lengthy to read through. We have just kind of skipped a rock through most of this morning, but notice the point is God is preparing them for this land of milk and honey. He is going to show them the benefit of this 40 years in the wilderness, and they're faithfully following him, understanding that he provided the manna and the quail and the water out of the rock, and notice that their clothes were not fading away and their shoes did not wear out. All of these things are a benefit of God. And notice that he will continue to lead them. And they would see that initially, as we'll see in the coming days, as they went to Jericho. March around the city 7 days. And, to see something like that unfold in front of you, you have to understand you're either on God's side or you're not. And so here, as we close the book, basically just preparations, further preparations for crossing into the land of promise. We're glad that you have been with us this morning. We're tickled that you think so very highly of the Gospel Radio Network. We appreciate your comments in the chat box this morning and the participation that you've been able to give. We certainly continue to pray for those that are weeping over new-made graves, and We certainly send out well wishes for those, especially of our number here locally, that are suffering from illnesses, and we hope that you're able to be well soon. Remember tonight, if you are one of those that are sick and has to stay in for one reason or another, you can worship with us tonight at the Mount Vernon Church of Christ. Our services go on air at 7 o'clock. We have another great lesson from Genesis 49, isn't it, tonight, as we're about to end up closing the book of Genesis in our adult class. You're welcome to join us there. We'd be glad to have you with us. A short devotional thought afterwards. And we'd love to have you. So if you're not able to attend a regular congregation tonight, you can worship here with us. Be glad to have you. Well, thank you for being with us today. We love each one of you, and continue to live your mornings for the Master.
You've been listening to Mornings for the Master on the Gospel Radio Network. Remember to join us each weekday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. Central Standard Time, or catch the replay at 9 p.m. Central Time. You can also contact us at mornings@tgrn.org if you have any questions we can help you with, or if you have events you would like to submit to our bulletin board, or just with general feedback about the program or network. We would love to hear from you. As we've had opportunity to spend time with the Master this morning in His Word, let's remember His words in Luke 6:46, when He said, "Why call ye me Lord, Lord, and do not the things which I say?" He goes on to say in verse 47 and 48, "Whosoever cometh to me and heareth my sayings and doeth them, I will show to you whom he is like. He is like a man which built an house and digged deep and laid the foundation on a rock. And when the flood arose, the stream beat vehemently upon that house and could not shake it, for it was founded upon a rock." Let's show the wisdom of that builder and go now to live for the Master.